Hey, everybody, this is Libby Denkman. Before we get started with Soundside today, I just wanted to let you know KUOW is facing a $900,000 revenue target shortfall. That's a big number, but you can be part of the solution. Today is Give Big, and I'm asking you to become a sustaining member of KUOW in order to give the gift of public radio journalism to your entire community. Go to kuow.org/donate or follow the link in the show notes. And thank you. On with the show. I want to tell you about a 50-year-old poetry publisher based in Port Townsend and the poets who love it. Jory Graham is one of the most well-known American poets of the last 40 years. She's published numerous books and won a Pulitzer Prize. But a few years ago, she was confronted with a question about what would happen to her work after she passed away.
I had to think about where would I want my work to be when I was gone? With whom? In whose hands? That's a very big question when that lands on you. When you realize, no, wait, you have 14 books in print. What the heck is going to happen to them all?
Jory called up Michael Wiegers. He's the executive editor of Copper Canyon Press, headquartered at Fort Warden State Park, just north of Port Townsend.
My first call with Michael was, if I bring you my work, will you take care of it when I'm gone? And, you know, that's where, you know, I knew what the community was.
Jory is opposed to huge collections of a poet's work being released posthumously. She refers to these thick tomes as doorstoppers. She says she feels strongly that a book is a singular object of a time and place in a poet's life. She says Copper Canyon Press gets that.
They understand that poets write books, which are an act of lived experience, if you will, through a certain period of time. And that when they complete that book, they've completed that action. And it is not just product, and it's not just the next on thing that they've put together. It's actually, in and of itself, what Stevens would say is an act of the mind in the process of finding what will suffice. You know, when Merwin writes one of his books, that is what will suffice at that moment to answer the questions that life puts to you.
Jory says that the quality of Copper Canyon's work is clear. They published work by highly acclaimed poets like June Jordan, W.S. Merwin, Ted Kooser, Jericho Brown, and Arthur Z. At the press, she sees herself as in conversation with those writers.
That outpost in Port Townsend, it has a lot of voices, dead and living, if you want to sit there and listen to them. I sometimes imagine if I was in the Copper Canyon offices and all the books at night could suddenly begin to speak, I'd be surrounded by a pretty ideal heaven and earth.
Paisley Rekdal is the former Utah Poet Laureate and has two books out from Copper Canyon with a third upcoming. When asked about how she came to publish through a small imprint based in a little town on the Olympic Peninsula of all places, Paisley says,
well, I stalked them, let's be honest. I grew up in Seattle, and so I was aware of Copper Canyon pretty much as soon as I started writing poetry because it was a press that was just always in the local bookstores. And there were a lot of writers that I had been introduced to via my poetry teachers who had been published in Copper Canyon Press. So for me, it was always a dream press.
Paisley fell in love with the work of C.D. Wright, who was publishing through Copper Canyon. She calls one of Wright's readings one of the two best of her life.
I had been following C.D. Wright's career for forever. And when I saw the books that Copper Canyon was putting out by her specifically, I just thought, you know, that's the kind of press I want to be with. You know, one that seems to understand an ambitious, capacious, strange kind of poetry project, one that sort of expands sort of the limits and range of what poetry can do. And I thought that's the kind of press I want to be with.
The fact that Copper Canyon only publishes poetry is another plus for both Jory and Paisley. They say they both felt like afterthoughts at other publishers who are more driven by market forces. Here's Paisley.
You're not the redheaded stepchild of the press. Everyone's the redheaded stepchild of the press in the sense that, you know, everybody is the unusual author. Everyone is the sort of niche project. If you are the one or two or third poet of a press that publishes mostly prose, You get the scraps.
Paisley and Jory's works appear in a new collection of poems drawn from Copper Canyon's last 5 decades. The collection is titled A House Called Tomorrow, 50 Years of Poetry. Michael Wiegers selected the poems in the anthology by asking readers about their favorite work from the last 5 decades of Copper Canyon Press. I sat down with Michael and asked him about re-experiencing poems he knew well through the stories of others.
That was the fun part. I realized that the press is no single individual, just like, you know, KUOW, and you have a whole crew behind you making that microphone possible. The same thing with my work as an editor, everything from, you know, interns from years ago to colleagues, staff members, to our board of directors, to our poets. And I wanted it to be truly a representation of that community of the press and not just Michael's favorite poems. You know, the world doesn't really need that. So I reached out to colleagues and people who I've known over, you know, my 30 years there and said, you know, tell me one of your favorite poems. Tell me a story about that poem as a way to bring them in and have them help curate the collection. And so the book really is a reflection of not poets and the voices of poets, but the voices of readers and the imagination of readers who have sustained the press over the many years. It was a beautiful process that allowed me to re-encounter poems that I was familiar with from having edited them, but seen through the context of other readers' eyes.
You might expect when people are suggesting poems for this anthology that they would bring up the Pulitzer Prize winners or the poet laureates. Was there an individual poem or a theme that emerged in your submissions that surprised you, though, that wasn't maybe the biggest rising star or the, you know, the most well-known pieces that rose to the top?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because that's actually what I expected. And I asked everyone to send me two, thinking that I would get a majority of poems from Jericho Brown, from Ted Kooser, from W.S. Merwin, from June Jordan. And yes, I got a lot of those, but I think the biggest surprise were those poems by little-known writers who people were, you know, saying they were moved by. So, for example, the Polish poet Anna Schwier, who was in translation from Polish, I was like, what's going on here? There were 7 or 8 people who mentioned different poems by her. Mm. It's a book that I've loved since, you know, I worked on it 20-something years ago. And to find that other readers were also similarly touched by it was a surprise, because, you know, a lot of the books fly under the radar. And in our work as publishers, we have to just believe and trust that they're going to find their audience, they're going to find their reader. Mm. I think the important work of an independent publisher like ours is to take risks on voices that aren't part of popular culture, but still carry a resonance beyond that.
How did it change reading the poems for this anthology versus when you first edited them, when you mm-hmm. had that extra oomph of the personal stories and the recommendations from staff and artists?
I think having the context of the individual poems or the individual stories behind why people chose them, it helped me see them anew. What I've done over my career as an editor is to try and find different entry points for all types of readers, and to be then given in turn all these different ways of reading a poem. A poem can sometimes be like, you know, toothpaste in a tube. You chase it all around, you know, to get it to come out. And just to discover a different type of reading from another reader helps me discover the poem anew and realize that maybe I wasn't reading it right, although I don't think there's any right way to read a poem. But, you know, I'm just being offered another way to look at the poem, and that ended up being a gift to me as an editor, and calls me to be, oh, I guess more attentive to other ways of seeing.
We mentioned you've published some very big names in poetry, former U.S. Poet Laureates W.S. Merwin and Ted Kooser, Jericho Brown, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his book, The Tradition. What draws these very well-known poets to want to work and publish with Copper Canyon Press?
Well, I think the fact that we've been around for 50 years focusing on poetry exclusively is very intriguing to a number of poets. So W.S. Merwin, for example, when he came to us, he had been publishing all of his career with larger houses, and he had realized that all those works were falling out of print, and we were slowly bringing them back into availability so that later on in his life, he decided he wanted to do a retrospective and saw that the majority of his work was with us because we had preserved his literary legacy, and decided to start publishing the poems that he wrote for the rest of his life with the press. And what I'm amused at is, you know, he had been a finalist for the National Book Award 7 times with larger houses, and he comes to Copper Canyon and wins it finally on the 8th try, and then the next book he wins the Pulitzer Prize. So I think poets see that and see how we can, on one hand, you know, really care for a poet that's at the top of their writing life, as well as we take risks on the young poets who are trying to publish their first book and trying to start building their audience.
I'm speaking with Michael Wiegers of Copper Canyon Press in Port Townsend about the imprint's 50-year anniversary. We'll continue the conversation right after this break. You're listening to Soundside on KUOW. Back with more of my conversation with Michael Wiegers, the executive editor of Copper Canyon Press. The small Port Townsend-based poetry imprint is celebrating its 50-year anniversary with a new anthology titled A House Called Tomorrow. The book is broken up by decade, from 1973 to 2023. And I asked Wiegers about how the press has changed over that time.
It's become more representative of the nation at large. I think when the press first started, it was really, it was a little more regional, but it was also, I think at one point we counted the books, and in the first 20 years, there were, I think, only 8 women on our roster. There were only a couple people of color among our list of writers. And so just to see how we have diversified as an organization and have been more representative of a larger population, I think that that's one of the things that's struck me. And I think that that can be said as well about poetry in general, that it has entered through, you know, years of school programs, of organizations like Seattle Arts and Lectures, Writers in the Schools program. It's reached a much wider audience, and as a result, we're seeing that play out in new generations of young poets who are offering different experiences beyond what the maybe predominantly white male literary tradition that was behind the starting of the press. I think also that there has been probably a little more of an influence of that same tradition of younger poets learning to perform their poems in front of a microphone, to be more conscious of an audience rather than the format of the book. But, you know, having said that, you know, my first love is always going to be the book itself, but I've now come to see the book as almost like sheet music for the poem. Oh. And so if you imagine that these younger poets, you know, they're performing the sheet music of their poems on the page to an audience. And I think that that's probably something that's changed over the past 50 years as well. Mm-hmm. And just also, if you were to look at the history of the press, started as a letterpress printer, and hand-bound books, et cetera. But if we consider at the start of the press, at the start of Copper Canyon Press, there was no Amazon. Google was not yet a verb. And we had no desktop computers. And so anybody can become a publisher and anybody can design their own book. And I think that we've really changed in certain ways in how we look at a book, how we even read a book.
There's this perception, and I hope I'm not offending you,
no,
of poetry potentially being out of touch. I mean, we think maybe when we study poetry in school, oftentimes we're assigned in a high school English class Baroque or Romantic poetry. There's a rich guy sitting next to a lake, you know, mm-hmm. talking about the water and what it means about life. but it's maybe not something that a modern reader would engage with and recognize themselves in. But when I look at this anthology, I mean, Randall Mann is talking about CRISPR in their poem Double Life. Alex Dmitriev writes about people going home to read sad poems online in Sunset on 14th Street. How do you keep poetry essential and relatable for the modern reader?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the first part of that question is that's traditionally how poetry was taught, to, you know, look at the old canon of writers. And that's important too, but we've seen that there has been a blossoming of poetry and new ways of writing, new ways of thinking, new ways of expressing oneself, and that comes out via poems. So yeah, when you see, you know, writers like Randall or Alex, they're bringing a whole different sensibility, having actually studied some of those old dudes that you mentioned. And so I think one of the things that poets are always trying to do is to make it new, to bring the eternal verities into a modern context. So, as you know, I've always liked how the Salvadoran poet Roque Dalton said, poetry, like bread, is for everyone. I believe that strongly. I don't consider myself at all an expert when it comes to poetry. I've just read a lot of it, and it always reveals something new. And similarly, I think that anybody can come into a poem, and maybe the first one you read, you may not like it, but you wouldn't judge all cheese if you had a slice of American Singles. You know, you might want to explore a little more than that. And I look at just the voices in this anthology, and they're so varied. That's where the excitement is for me, knowing that in American poetry and in international poetry, there's so many different perspectives and ways of learning about the world and looking at the world through a poem. You wouldn't want just one single view. And I think that that's what we've had historically, are those, you know, are the Lord Byrons and Percy Bysshe Shelley and Keats, some of whom I really like and inform the work that we do now. But again, our charge is to make it new. And I think that that's what most poets want to do as well, is to live in their time fully and feel in their time fully. And that's what they're doing through their poems. Mm.
This might be a very basic question, but sometimes I am confused about what counts as a poem. When does prose become poetry? Does it have to fit into a set form like haiku or sonnet or whatever? Does it have to have a pattern that is recognizable by an official poetry editor? I mean, what is a poem?
So I think that that's been argued since, you know, we started differentiating between poetry and prose. The way I edit poetry books and acquire poetry books, I'm looking for charged language. Robert Frost said a poem must, and I'll probably get this wrong as well, we can look it up, begins in wisdom and ends in delight. And that's what I hope a poem will do. But that doesn't really answer your question so much. I think that poems, they behave on the page differently than prose does. All those line breaks, those stanzas, those indentations that you see in a poem when you're reading it, those, like I said, are like sheet music. They're telling you, slow down, take a breath, pause, and, you know, have interruptions. Whereas prose, it's, you know, racing across the page, essentially. There might be more of it that, you know, takes longer, but a poem, I think, is really asking you to slow down and, you know, through what those, you know, again, line breaks and all this, the signatures of a poem on the page tell you. And sometimes, yes, there will be a prose poem which kind of blurs the lines. And still, that is usually writing that is filled with metaphor, and it may have internal rhymes, it may have jump cuts and things which use the language. A poem is asking us, I think, to use the language differently than we might rhetoric or regular discourse or a novel. It's a heightened form of language.
If a reader is to approach a poem, and maybe it's by, you know, an author that they find challenging, mm-hmm. how do you read a poem for the first time? How does one successfully approach and digest a poem for the first time if they're not a regular poetry reader?
There's no right or wrong way to read a poem. I might say that if you're reading a poem and you don't quite get it, you know, just start asking questions of it. What is it that I don't get? What's happening on this page? And what am I turning to it for insight? Am I turning to it for meaning? Or am I turning to it because of how it sounds? All these things, you know, can come forth in a poem. But we are in the modern era, I think that we are so committed to convenience. And a poem isn't always convenient. Sometimes it can be. It can be very direct and to the point. But just pay attention to what's happening with the language on the page beyond what the words are saying. Because I think the beauty of a poem is that it's not just the words on the page, but it's, again, the allusions and things that suggest meanings beyond those words. And so for a reader who's first new to it, maybe read it aloud and figure out, why am I stumbling over this part over and again? It's like, oh, that's something intentionally that the poet has done. Okay, why have they made me stumble on these words? Why have they asked me to slow down and pay attention to this particular idea? And just, you know, basically let your mind and imagination wander rather than thinking that the poem is going to tell you what to do or there's some right way of reading a poem. It's basically being alert and open to what the words offer.
In the preface to the anthology, you say that poetry books are objects that begin and end in solitude. A poet writes a poem in solitude. A reader often reads a poem in solitude. As an editor, you are the intermediary between these two lone people. How do you approach that role of intermediary? What are you trying to do?
I'm trying to understand both. And I'm trying to understand who the possible reader might be. And when I have a manuscript that we're going to publish, I'm trying to think not only of how it moves me personally, but how I might translate that emotion that I'm feeling to another reader. Essentially, the work of an editor I see as being an advocate. And so I'm trying to advocate for the writer to the reader and the reader to the writer. And so some of it is, I feel like I have to approach every poem as a beginning, as, you know, I'm a bit of the village idiot. I have to just ask lots of questions of it on behalf of readers who I may not know. And that's maybe the best part of my job, is when you're working on a book with a poet, you're entering into some very intimate space. And as an editor, I always try to approach it with a sense of vulnerability and a sense of, you know, that same, you know, you talk about people not knowing how to read a poem. And I try to bring that to every poem that I read, that I don't know, but I'm going to learn something here in the reading of the poem. And that is an act of honoring strangers out there in the world who are going to, I hope, come to the poem and bring a little bit of themselves and a little bit of their vulnerability and a little bit of their not knowing. And I think that being able to, you know, let go and not know is also kind of a beautiful and generous act.
Michael Wiegers is the executive editor of Copper Canyon Press. Thank you so much for joining me, Michael.
And thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And again, Copper Canyon Press is celebrating their 50th anniversary with a new anthology called A House Called Tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m., Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.